For me, it's the people. It's the journey it takes. You know, the great thing about some of the produce here is it's just down the road. It's not necessarily, I'm going to say it's better than someone in Byron Bay or you know, Mornington Peninsula. It's just great because it's here. It's fresh.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. During the series, we've talked about how Australia's advantage in trying to overcome the virus has been its distance from the rest of the world and the fact that it's surrounded by sea. Tasmania is even more protected. With a small population and also surrounded by sea, it's got on top of the virus. And for those on the Apple Isle, life has, to some degree, become relatively normal. But what does that level of normality look like? Massimo Mele is a consultant chef and food director of Grain of Silos in Tasmania. Massimo, how are you going?
I'm good, Hux. How are you going?
Good, mate. Thanks for catching up with us. What's like life like in Tassie at the moment?
Look, I feel bad saying this, but it's been a little bit back to business for us for a while, to be honest. It just hasn't been as busy. As you know, back when the restrictions kicked in, they closed the only way on the island by air or boats, and we've definitely felt the pinch of that. But those restrictions for us didn't last too long in the restaurant game. So, we went back to work at the end of July, and it's been really busy ever since. So, and I don't say that lightly because, you know, as everything else is going on around the country, it's been pretty catastrophic. So definitely grateful for being Tassie at the moment.
You did mention that you do feel a bit bad about that scenario, but how have you felt about what's happened with Melbourne? And it looks like they're going to open up again, and what they've been through. What's it been like watching from Tasmania?
It's been really surreal, to be honest, because if you're in Tassie at the moment, I mean, if you had a 24-hour camp going, you would honestly feel that it's just business as usual. People in restaurants, they're hugging, they're shaking hands. I mean, the social distancing, I think personally, as and I'm one of those as well, has kind of just kind of disappeared over time. It's kind of the first 4 to 6 weeks was that panic mode. And, you know, I've got elderly parents and my dad at the time was in respite aged care. So we were all kind of really panicking and concerned with, you know, not being in contact and all that kind of thing. But to be honest, at the moment, in the last few months, it's been normal to, you know, when you compare it to the rest of the country. In a way, that's probably a bad thing because I think if we do get an outbreak now they've opened the borders this week, if we do get a little bit of, spread or any kind of scare, I think we're up shit creek because we haven't been used to what everyone else has been used to. Definitely Melbourne and obviously Sydney and a few other states. With the social distancing and the level of attention it's received.
As you say, the borders have opened up again just recently. How important are travellers to Tassie's restaurants?
Look, I think Hobart more is more kind of reliant on tourists, being a bigger city. But it's definitely important. I mean, it's been great getting the local support. I mean, in Launceston, we opened that restaurant. And part of the ethos and the ideas and all that was about supporting locals. So I think we've been very well supported throughout that kind of situation. But, when you walk around the Hobart waterfront, if anyone's been down there, it's like the heart and soul of the city. And to see it quite bare, I mean, it's going to be nice to see some people walking around and just enjoying for what it is. I've worked on the waterfront, you know, before I left to go overseas. You know, I spent 10 years on the waterfront and now I'm back on the waterfront and I think it's definitely a beautiful spot, but it just needs to be appreciated by people with some money in their pockets because we need that for the economy.
What's the sense from the locals there? Is there any nervousness from locals as Tasmania reopens?
I think it is. It's kind of like a double-edged sword. We really want the borders open for that economic, I wouldn't say growth, but help that we definitely need. But at the same time, they're very kind of concerned with what happens when we start letting people in. I think a bit more information from the government as in what they're doing on the back end. I mean, no one likes to sit on a computer and read lots of data. I think just being that comfort to know that when they're coming through those gates, because to be honest, you know, I'm working on a new project in Hobart and there were people coming down from Sydney that weren't isolating, you know, and they were essential workers. And so it's really grey. And that's the concerning bit. It's like, who can actually get in and under the radar, and how does that happen, and why does that happen? That's what worries me, because at the end of the day, people do not, not everybody does the right thing. And that's what, it's almost like you're worried about everyone else and what they're going to do. In restaurants, I think it's just following the regulations that are put in place. Like I said, it's definitely relaxed a lot in Tasmania, so we're going to really get our, you know, bums in a gear and get it right.
You're a man that has his fingers in many pies. Can you take us back to those early stages when there was the lockdown? I know it's some time ago and it's relatively normal now. What sort of impact did it have on what you do?
It's actually quite interesting, because there's lots of different facets to what I, you know, how I make my living. And with the consultant, I mean, the consultant's usually always the first person to go, to be honest. A consultant in a pandemic is not really needed. But for me, I remember being in the car and the first event, we do a lot of food and wine festivals, and, you know, you've been there as well. And your calendar's usually pretty locked up for the year, which is, I'm always excited about. You know, you get ready for the new year. Various festivals around the country, and you really have lots of things to look forward to. And for me, it just kind of started with Tasting Australia was cancelled. That was the first event. And then I remember being in Adelaide for in Canberra for the Tourism Awards on the 6th of March. And, you know, I was at an event for 1,000 people that night. And then literally a week later, we're about to close. And I think 10 days later, I think the 23rd, we're done. But apart from the restaurants closing, for me, it was more events. So I felt like I just sat there in front of my calendar, and Dark Mofo was the next one to go. And that's a really big event for me now, like my fourth year this year. And it's just a great time to be in Tasmania. It's great food. Everybody's here. It's almost like, you know, when I lived in Sydney, no one ever visited me in Manly from Bondi because it was too far to go. And all of a sudden, none of my friends that would visit me in Tasmania now were coming, and they were coming for this event. And so it was a great social get-together as well. And then after that, Noosa Food and Wine and, you know, Taste of Paul Douglas. And the list. And soon as that was it, it was just – that was March, by the end of March. The whole year was gone, and the first part was really scary. Because I work, obviously, you know, when you work in a big hotel environment like that, there's a lot of decisions being made away from you, and it's out of your hands. So it was definitely very kind of upsetting the first few days, because you're in the dark. Plus, I was in Hobart. You know, I had the kids screaming because they obviously weren't going to daycare, and all of a sudden I went from being this really busy chef who had the whole year planned out to unemployed for the first time since I was 15, and you know, with the kids and full-time dad, which I hadn't really done before, and that's a huge role in itself. And at the same time, I had, you know, staff up north that were just kind of, you were just powerless to help. It was such a powerful thing. It was just like a huge tsunami. Like whatever was in the way, it just kind of took it. So it was pretty scary there for a while. But then I kind of just had to, I had two kids under four to kind of manage, and they kind of filtered a lot of it throughout the day. But I think, you know, listening to podcasts, I mean, I don't think you need people pumping you up a little bit. But what the podcast did for me is it gave me that connection to, you know, a lot of my mates, you know, especially in Melbourne and Sydney, what they were doing, what they were going through. But also we're in a very different climate down here. And we're a regional city when you really think about it, especially Launceston. So a lot of what everyone was doing didn't really apply to us. We didn't have the volume in people. We didn't have the infrastructure. We didn't have the demand. Like, people didn't want takeaway. You know, people didn't want take-home boxes because everyone's got great produce. Everyone's got access to great produce. So, you know, for a few months there, it was kind of like, what am I going to do? Like, this is just, we were literally just waiting to be told, you know, we can start to slowly, you know, come back. And that in itself was it was an absolute nightmare because, you know, we wanted to plan our return. It's like, well, you don't often get an opportunity to restart your restaurant. And there were so many things we wanted to get right and improve that we didn't get an opportunity to, you know, being just on 2 years old. And they turn around, like, you're open next week. I'm like, how do you open a restaurant of that size in a hotel? So it was just a nightmare, to be honest.
Did it change the offering in the restaurant? How did you approach that opening? Is it a different restaurant to what it was?
Yeah, look, I think Thomas is the head chef. He looks after the operations, and we were in that off, you know, the off season, we call it, like, we were busy behind the scenes planning, you know, with the menu and what we wanted to do differently. And we really wanted to just get back to basics because the menus are always too big. You know, you always have to have, you know, something for everybody. There's a lot of requirements sometimes within, I guess, you know, brand standards in hotels. I guess for us, we just want an opportunity to have a clean slate and just go back to really a smaller menu, more interchangeable, you know, not really setting it in for, you know, this is the next 3 months. It really does go off the whisper of what's available. And in saying that, we get people, you know, producers and even people at home, like, coming in and, you know, bringing in produce from their backyards, you know. And to get that through a hotel environment was hard because, you know, it's obviously it's not easy to kind of from a monetary point of view, how do you kind of pay for that or but we didn't want to stop that. So we worked out ways around it. But we really wanted to kind of create the menu based on that. So, and we did that. I mean, when we first reopened, it was obviously 10 people like everybody else at the start, or in Tassie. So it was just a set menu, which was really good because for the first time, there was less waste. We had two chefs on. It was really efficient and we just changed the menu every week. But after 3 or 4 weeks, the people just wanted a la carte. It was kind of like, I felt like it was pressure more from consumers and people, you know, the public are like, can you just hurry up and go back to normal? That's kind of how me personally, I'm not saying that's how I felt. It's like, can we just have an a la carte menu? We want choice. We don't want to come in at this time. We just kind of, you know, kind of go back to that. So we just we adjusted and we've been solid. We've been busy. You know, we've been growing pretty much since we've opened. We're just getting stronger and stronger. And I think we're a bigger venue. You know, it's clean. People don't feel like they're any kind of danger in the sense because it is, you know, a large venue. Possibly, I don't know. There was a bit more comfortable. But for me, you know, we've gone back to basics with the menu and it's really been, you know, a blessing in disguise because I think for too long and we're, you know, doing our nuts on dishes and running restaurants, and I think it was probably the wake-up call we all really needed. Whether or not it's a cultural change, you know, we'll wait and see.
I know you got many things on the go in Hobart and Tasmania at the moment. We can get to those. You made a real name for yourself in Sydney, but you're actually from Tasmania and made your way up to the Big Smoke. How did you get interested in food as a young kid?
Well, I when you've got a mother like I have, who's just, you know, she's the quintessential Italian mama, you know, with the apron and the accent and the garden. And I think, you know, I'm not saying that I was inspired as a kid that I wanted to cook. I was inspired to eat. she was just a great cook. But when I was 10, I started working with my mum and dad in the family restaurant in the outskirts, northern suburbs of Hobart, and, you know, quite a rough little neighbourhood. But that was like our trattoria. It was called La Bella Napoli. And, you know, dad did savoury, mum did sweet, and I, you know, waited on tables after school and weekends. And kind of from when I was 10, that was pretty much what I did. And we had that for maybe 10 years and, well, two different restaurants over that time. And then I just, you know, I started working in cafes after school, and I was just always working. You know, like I never went camping or went away with all the other kids and, you know, holiday trips. And like, we went on one holiday when we were kids. You know, and I won that because I'd fill out the Coca-Cola on the back of the, you know, I'd stack the fridge and then fill out the forms and send it away. And we won a trip to SeaWorld Nara Resort for four, and there was five of us, so we had to pay for me anyway. You know, like we kind of did it. You know, we worked hard as a family. So, and then my dad sold the restaurant, and I just started working after school in that local cafe, and I'd wash dishes in the morning and then get all the doughs ready for the bakers in the afternoon, and did that for, you know, like grade 10, 11, 12 after school. And one day I think one of the chefs was sick and they just needed someone to jump on the line. And I was on the focaccia section, and I got told to, you know, get off the dishwasher and jump on the section. And that was it, I started working, you know, that section for the next 2 years. And I just loved hanging out with the guys in the kitchen. You know, I wasn't like, oh my God, I'm going to make the best focaccia I've ever made. I just wanted to work with those guys, and they'd be joking around, they're taking the piss, you know, they're playing practical jokes on each other, and at the same time smashing out, you know, 500-600 covers down at Salamanca, and with a smile on their face. And it was really rare to see people working with a smile on their face. and I just kind of just kept doing it. And I went and got an apprenticeship, and my dad came in to the head chef, and I'm still in contact with him now. He said, I need you to do everything possible to get my son away from being a chef. I want him to clean the grease traps, you know, scrub the bottoms of the ovens, like the worst shitter's jobs you can find. You've got 3 months to talk him out of it. And his name was Adam Aiken, actually, Chef Aiken. He just rang my dad and said, oh, no, I'll give up. I'm taking him on, end of story. Well, there's not much you can do. So that's kind of where it was at. And then, you know, finished my apprenticeship and then just got on a plane and went to Melbourne and worked at Donovan's for a while, which at the time that was 2000, and that was one of the restaurants at the time that was really, you know, I mean, you walk in and just amazing chefs, amazing pedigrees through that venue. But even the way that happened, I was just every Tuesday we'd read the Epicure. Me and Chef Aiken, and every week I'd just see the ads, and one day we're just sitting there at work in our break and he said, why don't you call? I said, no, I can't call. Like, I've never been out of Tassie. He's like, just call. And I remember the ad, Must Enjoy Cooking, Robert Castellani, and I jumped in a plane the next day and I wore my green, disgustingly green suit from my first communion. Didn't know how that still fit, and jumped on a plane and got to Melbourne and borrowed at my mate's car, and I got there and it's a pink Suzuki Swift, and if you take it above 60 k's, it just blows, you know, disgusting smoke,
Didn't know Melbourne, didn't understand the Millways, and somehow landed in St Kilda and did the interview, and I started a week later. So yeah, it was pretty intense. Mum and Dad didn't really know what was going on. Like, you know, one day I'm just working down the waterfront and next minute I'm gone. But they understood. They understood that I wanted to be better. And the only way to be better was to leave Tassie. You know, there was a couple of really great cooks, but there was no great restaurants where you can go and get that training that you really needed to, you know, especially at the beginning. Did that for a while and then came back and opened a restaurant in Launceston, Mud Bar. So rocked up in Launceston from Melbourne, which is a bit of a shock back, you know, 20 years ago, and pink tips in my hair and big chip on my shoulder, and I think I was 21 and opened a restaurant, which was really successful, but, you know, like I wasn't really ready to do that. You know, who's ready at 21 to open a restaurant? You know, made a lot of mistakes in that. What's managing people? I didn't even know what that meant. I just thought it was about the food, and that was it. So that was a pretty good experience.
Well, you ended up winning Young Chef of the Year while you were there.
Yeah, well, that's where that was at. Yeah, and that's how I got to Sydney. Like, but the funny story is I entered that, and so that would have been 15 years ago, 16. I love it how they say the inaugural winner, inaugural. It just means, you know, the old fart. But I remember 2005, Luke Mandon, first year, and it was Lexus Young Chef of the Year back then. And I must have got through the process and the state level, and I remember it was just in between lunch and dinner service, and someone rang and they said, oh, it's Luke Mang. And I'm like, whatever. And I hung up. And it's like, because I thought it was my sous chef just playing pranks, because I hadn't heard from him. So I thought, I didn't get it. I didn't expect to get it. There was great chefs going for it. And, you know, I was kind of like a little bit self-taught, really driven, but still didn't have that experience. You know, I'd only worked at Donovan's 3 or 4 years and still needed to grow. But so I understood it. And then he called back in and I'm like, can you just, you know, go away, like seriously. And then the third time he rang, it's like, don't hang up. It's actually Luke Mangan. You know, you've made it to Sydney. And I think that trip was where I hadn't been to Sydney before. So when you rock up and you're part of this really cool, you know, that it was like a rock star. And not just because of the chefs, but like the whole, you know, they take you to the restaurant. I went to Luke's restaurant, you know, I met Big Joe Pavlich, and that's been a lasting friendship since then, you know, because he's one of the first people I've ever met, or he's the first person I met in Sydney that I got on really well with, and just complete respect, but scary ass when you rock up Hobart. But did the competition, did the event. You know, did pretty well, and that's when I was like, I'm going to come back here. And that night of the awards night, you know, we're in the elevators and all these really fancy chefs, and they're all giving you their business cards because they, you know, they want you to come and work for them. And I go away overseas for a while, come back, and nobody remembered who I was. They were like, who? Like, oh, that was, who are you again? So, you know, it started that process, start at the bottom again when I, you know, when I actually decided to move to Sydney, when I came back from being overseas, I was like, you know, Sydney, Melbourne. I think I just love that whole, the beaches, the lifestyle, work hard, play hard. So, you know, I kind of picked Sydney.
Well, you ended up being running Hugo's Group of Kitchens. What was that experience like?
that was amazing. That was more lessons learned, to be honest, because I struggled to find a job in Sydney. As in, when I came back from overseas and I, you know, travelled around a bit, I was applying for head chef positions. I was kind of going off the back of being, you know, People's Choice, Young Chef of the Year kind of thing. And I thought, you know, I thought I was better than what I was. And I was going for head chef's job and had a few kind of fails. I was close to getting one. I remember Lo Studio when that was there. That was that was about to reopen again. And then and someone disappeared and that didn't happen. And then I was going to go work for Danny Russo at the Belvedere, I think it is, Beresford. And then that got delayed. And then I ended up catering for a bit with gastronomy and just thought I'd just take a little bit of a step back and, you know, work for those guys for about 6 months. But that was just like, that was like doing catering, but next level, some of the stuff I was doing there. So I really enjoyed that kind of process. But I applied for a few jobs in the meantime and I just wasn't getting the traction. So I thought I'll just go back to being a cook, back to basics. And I just applied for a job. One job was at Hugo's, the new restaurant that was opening in Manly for a junior sous chef. And the other job was working for Nick at the Strand, upstairs there, the Italian restaurant was just about to open, Pendolino. And applied for both positions and I took the one in Manly. And that was it. That's kind of, it's funny how there's a line in the sand and you can go either way. And took the role there and opened. That was just, you know, Hugo's was just, it was just a beast. It was just, you know, 1,000 covers a day. I just had a small role and it was just really busy. And obviously they were known for their pizzas, but when they opened Manly, they really wanted to step up the restaurant offering, I remember. But long and the short of it is within a year, all the management crew was gone from the kitchen and I just kind of bypassed all these guys and became head chef. And basically got given the baton and it's like, well, it's time to see if you can sink or swim. And I just took control of it. And I had probably the best team I've ever worked with at the time. And there was a decent crew. When you're doing that many covers a day consistently, it really does become about being organized and having some real key people in positions. And we did that, whether it was quality control, ordering. I learned pretty quick smart over the, you know, 7 years what you need to do to run a business that size at that level. And, you know, and the guys that were working back then, you know, are still the guys that come and help with me down here at Dark Mofo, you know, when it's on or, you know, they're great mates, but just really good. They were really good at what they were doing. And I mean, it's, but after 7 years, it was time to do my own thing. I just kind of, when you're working for a group that size, it's never really your own. And there's a lot of kind of rules and things you need to abide by. So I decided that it would be easy to start my own catering business. it wasn't. It wasn't at all. But I enjoyed it. I started the business out of a dirty old van that I, you know, was given by my local butcher in Manly. Great mate now who used to buy my meat off him. And he just said, oh, mate, I've got this old van. You know, it's an old panel van and, you know, you can use it, caddy van. And I said, cool. And you couldn't get into fourth gear, so you had to go from third to fifth. And it was just a shit fight. But I rented a kitchen in Bondi, which is it's not there anymore. It's actually where that new building's gone, where I paid $20 a day rent or $20 an hour to use the kitchen and $80 a week rent to have two shelves in the cool room, two shelves in the dry store. And when I did a job, I'd have to book in and come back and wash all my stuff up and put everything away and basically share the kitchen. But it was a Jewish kitchen as well. So when it was blessed, you couldn't touch anything. So you come back from a job and you're like, everything's just strapped and you can't touch it. I'm like, oh, this is just ridiculous. And I'd go home and take everything home. Just, you know what I mean? Anything can go wrong when I was starting the catering because you're doing it off, you know, you haven't got a ton of money to invest in brand new kitchens and
you're kind of establishing yourself. And my first job was like a 50 grand job. And I remember telling the client who I knew quite well, I said, mate, I just think I haven't thought this through properly. I don't think I can execute this. And he's like, Mass, you've done plenty of work for our family before. You'll be fine. I'm like, I don't think so. Like, this is freaking huge. And I did the job, and that event kind of just catapulted me into like, well, now it's Food by Massimo. And just started doing events and really cool stuff. Like, one of the biggest ones we have was recreating for 300 people. It's part of their team building event. I had to go and take 150 people with me. This is on a homestead down at Barrel, and recreate like a MasterChef environment where there's 10 teams of 15 people. They're all different countries, and everybody's got to cook two recipes. And the other 150 people are with these set designers, so we've got to create a food and wine festival in 3 hours. And it was their team building event. And you know what I mean? Like, I'm hiring trucks, I've got vans, I've built 15 kitchens in this hall with all hired equipment. Like, just a lot of the time I was just faking it as I was going and just somehow just nailing it. Because once again, I had my best mates working with me. You know what I mean? Like, I'd give them plenty of notice, and they'd have, take a weekend off, their jobs, and I'd have this amazing crew that would just, would do anything for me, or, just to get it, just to do it anyway and do it right. And we'd have the best time, always with a smile on our face. You know, like, didn't matter how big the job was or how many hours we had to do, we just got it done. So I really enjoyed that period in Sydney. It was like a 3 or 4 year period of just whenever something really cool came along, or you couldn't really pitch it, quote for it because it was a little bit out there or crazy or not sure it can get done. I used to get a phone call and I just see if I could do it. And usually I'd probably say yes before I could think about it because I'm like, I want to be the guy that does it. So that was pretty much it.
Well, you've done a lot of things since then. We could probably do a 3-part series to go through them all. But what drew you back to Tasmania?
My wife. So I knew my wife from 20 years ago, but we literally just bumped into each other. And then we started hanging out and I started coming down to Tassie probably a bit more. Because Tassie for me wasn't always that great because Dad had a stroke. So when I'd come home, it wasn't always a really great experience. It was always sometimes a little bit sad. So I'd never stay home for much longer than 2 or 3 days and really only like Christmas and bits and pieces. And as soon as I start, catching up with Christy, I'd be coming down and, Dark Mofo was on, and there was Tassie had changed. And I'd been running away from it for 15 years because between you and I, or everyone else now they can listen, I never wanted to come home. I never wanted to come back. Like, I was so happy in Sydney, but all I really remembered was the Tassie of when I left 15 years ago. Shit food, crap work, nothing to do, nowhere to go. That's all I remembered. And kind of hanging out with Christy, I started seeing a different side, and things had definitely changed. And there's a lot of great chefs that are there to thank for that as well. Mona's obviously there to thank for that. It's done a great thing for Hobart. But I started seeing different things and experiences. And then I was still working in Sydney, living in Sydney and coming home every 10 days. And we had our first child and Christy decided, I said, come to Sydney. And I was working La Scala at the same time and they just sold that, but they wanted to open a new restaurant in the city, Martin Place. So I was working on that project. I said, come to Sydney and let me just open this restaurant because I just can't do that. Traveling back every week, it's just going to kill me. So she moved to Sydney with our firstborn and they ended up selling Veranda in the city. And so that never really happened. And my wife wasn't really that keen on staying, needed your family support. So she moved back, but I kind of kept consulting and just coming backwards and forth for a while. So I did that for like a year. And then I just decided that's it. I just need to be
completely invested in Tassie and just start my own kind of that own, I guess that journey back to, you know, I can do my events, I can do all that stuff in Tassie. But to be honest, it's not really a lot of that here. So for the first part, I just kind of bang a head against the wall, you know, been a bit of an idiot really, because I was like, oh, I just miss Sydney, I miss Sydney, I miss Sydney. And I was like, just go back. I'm like, well, that's not really the right thing to do. And that's how I fell in with just kind of getting back to basics, and I just started hanging out with farmers and producers. And I think through that experience, and then obviously doing grain, and when I did grain, I thought, I want to go and take the owners, the developers and everybody on a three-month journey, not every day, but over the course of 3 months, meet producers. You know, it's like meet the grower. And I did that on the journey on the way to open the restaurant. I did that with a couple of my mates, came down and they filmed the content and created some content. And all of a sudden, it was the first time any chef had ever gone to visit farms in that way, and, you know, taking the restaurant manager or the food and beverage managers to meet these people. And it just kind of gave me a new kind of, not position in the industry, but I guess a bit more trust, because when I moved back, you know, I think I was, they just really treated me as like the Sydney chef. I had to work hard to become a Tasmanian again, which sounds really absurd.
What's so great about the local produce? Is there any producers that you can pinpoint that really stand out for you?
Well, I mean, well, it's easier to pinpoint. I just did a long table lunch at a goat farm on the weekend, and you know, and they're really good friends of ours. But Tongola Goats Curd, I mean, I think they won the Delicious Award last year. But it's not necessarily, you know, to say, oh, their product is amazing and it's better than anyone else, because that's not really what it's about. It's the reason I mean, it's a great product. And here in Tassie, it's probably the best, you know, when you compare it to other places around Australia. That's a really hard thing to do sometimes. But for me, it's the people. It's the journey it takes. You know, the great thing about some of the produce here is it's just down the road. It's not necessarily, I'm going to say it's better than someone in Byron Bay or you know, Mornington Peninsula. It's just great because it's here. It's fresh, you know. And when you actually taste produce, especially fresh produce, that is literally fresh, as in whether it's picked that day or even the night before, or fish caught that day, or the guys fishing the calamari at 10 o'clock at night, you know, and the fishermen are sending you videos to you, waking you up in the middle of the night, then you wake up the next day and it's in the kitchen. I mean, that's pretty special. And the closest you ever get to that, or I ever got to that, was just an Instagram post. You know, like you don't get to have that when you're in the city. So I think there's some really great people doing some great stuff. And the product speaks for itself. The other day when I did this event, you know, the goat was from the farm, their beef was from the farm, some charcuterie, which was from Forkett Farm, which was, you know, 2.5 hours away, but like beautiful part of northeast Tassie. But all the vegetables from a garden. Like, I've never been prouder to do, and I've done pop-ups. That's all I've really done for the last 3 or 4 years, or created events. But I've never created an event where you're eating my olives, you're eating the last of the broccolini florets, you're eating stuff, the tomatoes that I preserved last year from my garden. So for me, I've done this full circle. I'm finally becoming what I loved about my Italian heritage is you know, making your own your own food, or producing your own food. That sense of pride, I think that's what, for me, what I find different in Tassie is at the moment, when you say what's so good about it, it's just people are really proud, like, to give you something or to offer, put something on the table. And I think that's really special.
A little earlier you mentioned, or you alluded to, a new project that you're working on. What can we expect from that?
More of the same, really. Italian restaurant. It's for me, it's going back to basics, really, when it comes to a little bit of heritage. You know, kind of Italian flavours with Tasmanian produce. making lots of handmade pasta as well as a pasta machine. And just doing the dishes that I kind of grew up eating that, you know, when I was at school, I'd get picked on as the wog boy. And then, you know, 20 years later, I'd charge someone $15 for a panini, the same ingredients that my mum. But really special, like, you know, getting charcuterie made for us, you know, making passata, but all the passatas, like, you know, whether it's tomatoes from my garden or someone's farm, it's creating food that people just have that reaction. It's just, oh, wow, that's delicious. It's not just, it's not about the frilly stuff. It's really just about wholesome, you know, generosity and kind of where I started, really, because I've just done this big full circle in 20 years or 20, you know, 22 years from, you know, my family home, traveled the world, traveled everywhere else, and then I've just come straight back to where I started. So for me, that's kind of the idea of the restaurant is about going back to that. So, you know, working with mum and dad in the restaurant, dishes that probably, you know, I remember from being a kid that I know are the delicious, not just going to put them on there because it's part of my, you know, nostalgic trip down memory lane. It's, I know that people like the simple things and they like it done well. And if you can give that, you know, offer that in a situation where they get really beautiful service, professional service, warm service, old school hospitality, then if we can do that, then I'm pretty happy.
What's this period of time been like for you? Has there been positives for you, and has it changed you this year?
It's made me a better dad, to be honest. Yeah, it's made me a better dad. I think spending time with my kids, at the beginning I took it as, you know, forced leave. But spending more time, being more present, I really enjoyed that. I've learned a lot more about them. And then that's made me more tolerable as well, more to them, not to me. Because I know you've got young kids, and it's really funny. Back in the day, when I'm obviously the last of my friends to have kids, but you know, my sous chef and head chef used to work with, I used to just always get stuck into them. Like, what is wrong with you? Why are you so tired? Like, fuck, well, you know, I only did a 10-hour shift yesterday. It's nothing. Like, but they had kids, and they had two kids as well. So, you know, like, I understand now just how that relentless side of it. So trying to juggle both things. But I think for me also is really clear is what I need to do, and probably not have to do as many things that I was doing before. Because I think before, like, I was just trying to hold on to, you know, I was still kind of trying to be relevant, because I felt I left Sydney in a way so quickly, and I wasn't ready to do that at the time. And there was things that I wanted to achieve as a chef as well. And I felt at the time in Tassie, I kind of probably took a step back and then kind of disappeared, you know, in the background. But I kind of thought through all this that you just stick at it, you know, and I think grit is one of the most important ingredients in success, is just keeping at it and not giving up. And I think for me, when this opportunity came on for the new restaurant, which, to be honest, has been around for 2 years now, it's just been, you know, backwards and forwards and delays and things like that. I just knew that it was an opportunity to kind of finally, you know, have a blank canvas where I can kind of do something really special, and bring in all those producers that the last 2-3 years I've worked so hard to get to know, into that restaurant as well, same as we do up north. Because it is a very different situation when you're cooking seasonally, like honestly cooking seasonally. It takes a lot of training because, you know, you don't have the eggplants all year round that you can have on your menu. You don't have pepper. You don't have some of those ingredients that you probably take for granted, because you're like, I just want to shop at the market. And it's like, well, you go to the market and for a period, you know, throughout the year, you've got cabbages and apples. Like, you know, like, I mean, that's probably a bit of a drum, but it could be that bad sometimes, as in it's like it's not that easy. So you have to really train yourself to become, to work seasonally and
cook seasoning. That's why I've decided to start growing so much produce. I'm actually living and breathing, you know, that kind of lifestyle. If you come down, mate, you'll see. There's produce everywhere. So it's a bit like my mum used to do. My mum used to have tomato plants everywhere. So you couldn't play basketball. You couldn't kick the footy. Any spare bit of dirt, there would be a tomato plant. And no shit, this year I'm doing the same thing. I'm like creating spaces there wasn't before because I'm like, I just want more and more tomatoes.
Well, mate, it's always great to catch up. It's incredible to have you on Deep in the Weeds today. Please keep in touch and look forward to seeing what you do with the new restaurant, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks, mate. Thank you.
This is the Deep in the Weeds podcast. I'm Anthony Huckstep. Stay tuned as we share the stories of Australia's hospo community, suppliers and producers in search of hope during this pandemic. Special thanks to executive producer Rob Locke for making this all happen. Follow us on Instagram at Deep in the Weeds Podcast or email us at podcast@deepintheweeds.com.au. Stay safe and be well.